All right, boys, say good evening. I want to tell you a shiur today. You know how it goes. How do people write a book? Like a big scientist, big academic writes a book. It goes like this. He has some blitz one day in the bathroom, in the shower. And then he finds some armakoymes, some sources to add to it. And then he makes a perish based on that on three other books. And then he has a whole book. It takes him 2 years to write. Another year to get approved to the approval. And then it goes to the approval, approves it. And then the publisher publishes it. And then the book gets published. And then it gets reviewed. If he's zoyche, then it gets reviewed by two people. And then the guy that writes the encyclopedia reads the book or asks his ChatGPT to read the book for him and makes a little summary of the book and says the Ikke Chiddush of the book in five lines. And that's what everyone knows. And then the book stays on the shelf, right? That's how it works. So I realized that every sheet of mine is really a whole book. It's just that it's ready to schlaf of the review. I say the summary, the Chiddush. If you want, you could go and work it out into a whole book. But it's a shoot that's out because nobody's going to read the whole book anyways. So I might as well just start by the summary. And the Kiddush HaChiddush and Shai. But it's true. Every sheet is, almost every sheet you can make a whole book about. So today I have a new book to write. New Galus. Of course, it's a continuation of last week and last 2 weeks that we're cocking Zechmes and Kiddush. And I realized today, yesterday, someday in the shower or somewhere, I realized that's all connected. Remember that we're talking about some problem like this. Where's Luzzy that doesn't understand the problem? So can we solve this problem a little? We're talking about a problem about what I call the problem of the inside-outside. Right? The Pnimius and the Chetzonius. Everyone knows that Pirim is about someone, something, even the Pnimius or the Chetzonius, I don't remember. Anyways, those are the words that everyone likes to talk about all the time. It's cold? Turn this on, it makes it warm faster. And everyone knows, this is, plug it in over here under, or somewhere, and it's going to make it a little warm faster. No, right here, there's a plug, under me.
Yeah, but that's going to bother you.
Okay, so, no, don't do it there, it's going to scratch the system. Over there.
I'll find it.
Actually, it's not going to crash. Same anyway. But that piece is going to crash, it's not. Okay, yeah. So anyways, we're warm. It's very warm. So what am I saying? We're discussing this nesegia that's called pnimius hachitzonius, or inner and outer. And the other is very tzimisht, especially Rabbi Luzer, that was here last week and didn't come show up today. What are we tzimisht? That tzadechad, we're going with shit Rambam. We're trying to teach the Rambam's shit. Tzadechad, on one hand, it seems like the Rambam's shit is very external. It's all about actions. Like, and you already told me there's a Pesach Rambam that the Chassidim misread and so on. But Lemaisa, that's how I understand it. Tzadchei, the Rambam was Chas V'Shalom, not a matter of Litvak.
Of course. The problem where he was like,
this is the problem that we're stuck a little bit. Okay, Tzadchei, we're about inner being a person. We're not about being a machine that produces things. We're about being a person, a kind of person, which sounds like an inner thing. So what is the Ikke? What's the Nekudah of the Yid? What's the Nekudah of the good person? Is it inside or is it outside? The Olam is very tzimisht about this.
Is it the chicken or the egg? Like, where does it start from?
Not only about the chicken or the egg, it's about what is the definition? What does it mean to be a good person? Right? Now, last week we got into this Nekudah that there seems to be also a Shala. This was my Ikke thing last week, but I want to give you more context for it. Maybe we'll understand better what's going on. We got into this nekeda that there's a shaila. What does it mean to be good on the inside? What does it even mean? And I will tell you right now, there's two things that means. I'm saying too much of a drusha. No, I'll get back to reality soon. There's two different things that it means. What does it mean? Everyone, all the Bible should have come and beat him and say, you should know, even if you're wearing a mask, you're good on the inside. What does this mean that you're good on the inside? What does it mean? Tach, what does it mean? But I'm serious now. I hear all these drushas. I went to shul on Shabbos. Someone gave a whole shmuz about the Mishkan, not to be li l'shmi. And Epsa Achran said that means it has to be l'shma, which means it has to have good intentions. Total misreading of the Rashi. Don't tell him. I didn't tell him. I'm not telling you who said it. It's total shtis and pshat that Rashi doesn't mean l'shma. No shaykhis. And in any case, and therefore it has to be nidvas aleiv. And this whole shtickle Torah about the heart that makes the Mishkan, because Hashem, the Ashras, Ashkin is not in the Ma'isim, it's in the lathe. They already heard Mashiach Friday, that doesn't answer the Kasha, it makes the Kasha worse. Why is your lathe better than a building? Nobody knows. But that's what this guy thinks. But there's some intuition behind this. I just don't know what it means. What is this? What are we talking about even when we say this nidvas aleiv, the rotzin aleiv, the pnimius of the idwa? What do you mean? Could you tell me in English what does this mean? Does anyone know what it means? Do you know what it means? Yeah, what does it mean?
It means that we don't use the external.
That's a microphone. The external, can I catch him?
No, the external.
What is external versus internal? What does he think words mean?
That means nothing outside of the you is what makes the you good or bad. It's the you that makes you good.
Okay, could you...
That's what it means.
Could you elaborate, like spell it out? Tell me what this means. Of a different language and words that make sense to me. What is this you?
Yeah, so let's say I'm a very talented person, right?
Yeah.
And I wear a police uniform, right? Yeah. So the person is like, you're a bad cop, right? So now you're a bad person. Let's say, right? Let's say. Come on, yeah? But in other words, the uniform is now telling me what I'm supposed to be, right? And let's say I'm bad at being a cop. Right? So now I'm bad me. Not bad me. But I have more than good talents. I have 150 good talents. I could be the best comedian. I could be the best writer. I could be whatever. I'm a police officer. Right?
So what people are saying, so this doesn't emphasize me.
And the way that people see me is because the chitzonius of the uniform.
That's not chitzonius. That's
yeah,
more
the uniform
like,
is
more,
telling you what I am. I'm not that.
So in other words, being a musician or whatever you think you really are is also a uniform. All you're saying is that you put your acting in the wrong way for what you are. I don't know what this mysterious you is. In a very simple sense, my talents lie in playing music, not in being a policeman. Now talents are a thing. It's not you. It's something about you, right? It's an accident of the you, we could say. Something about you.
No, I don't know if it's an accident. I think all the talents actually make you up.
When I say accident, I mean it was still an accident, right?
Not a
car accident.
No, I know what I'm talking. I'm talking directly to Aristotle, actually. From Oli Chidim in the past, I actually thought about this recently. I think the thing that makes up a human is all his talents.
Okay, let's say, and therefore...
Like ingredients that make up a cake versus lemonade, right? This is what makes up a human, and that's why there's no same human the same, because everyone has like a different ingredient, different talent.
But that's somewhat wrong, but we're not going to get into this. Well, we're just saying, I'm just trying to understand what you mean when you say, so the inner, when you say the inner, you mean the thing that matches with your predispositions better.
Correct.
That's what you mean. That's not inner. There's nothing more internal about this. It's not inside you. Both of these are actions. Being a musician is something you do with your body, with your people hear it. If you're a musician and nobody hears it, you're almost like a tree that falls in the forest and nobody saw it falling or heard it falling.
It's good at it.
What does that mean? Good at what?
You mean like a gun?
Good at what? You're beitzim good at what? Exactly. You're beitzim good at what? At playing music. That's something that you're doing. The being good, which you're calling beitzim, is nothing.
Could understand.
It's just an ability.
Be musical.
So when you're sleeping, you're also a musician?
If not.
Okay, and what's the point of that?
Well, to have musical dreams.
Okay, then you're doing something in your dream. Let's say a dream is something, or not. That's a different question. What I'm trying to get at is, what you're talking about is just a person who is doing the wrong thing. Like, I'll give you a mushal, because people are confusing. Tables are simpler to talk about. I like talking about tables. All philosophers like talking about tables. You know why? Because they give their class by a table, usually. That's why. Or a chair. You'll notice, the philosophers love talking about tables and chairs. It's because the most obvious physical object in their vicinity, they're never outside. They never see anything besides their tables and chairs. Like classroom people. So, anyways, if I would be like on a walk, I would say a tree. Or if I would be a normal person, I would say a human. But humans are too complicated to talk about. Because a lot of things. But anyways, so I'm going to explain you what you mean when you say plemius. When you're saying, it's not plemius, just say it's not internal. It's just a very simple definition of a function, right? If I use a table, this is a very nice table, and it's the correct table for giving my class at, let's say. If I'll use it just to block the door, that is mostly not using it as a table. It's using it as a piece of wood, which is kind of a strong piece of wood. It blocks the door. It might even do that well. Might not do that well because it's not strong enough to block the door. But might even do that well, but it's still not what you're calling the plemius. Because it's sort of misused, it's mismatched. It's meant, it's how you see, like, for blocking the door, I wouldn't have, like, this square shape, and it wouldn't have the feet that it has. It wouldn't be organized. So there's something mismatched or
asymmetrical.
Not symmetrical, like, something doesn't fit ill-suited. When you try to, right?
Ill-suited or yeah?
Yeah, it's ill-suited for blocking the door, although it can be used for that, but yeah. And the same way, a person whose talents don't lie in being a policeman will be not doing it well, or will struggle, will suffer, because the kind of person he is doesn't fit very well into the policeman uniform. That's very nice, true thing. But I don't see what this has got to do with pnimius and chatzonius. That's just saying what a thing is versus what it's for, right? what a thing is for, which is what it is, or one thing, important part of what it is, versus what it's not for. But in some sense, it's possible to be used for, but it's not for that. Nachon? But when people say, you should know that internally every Yid is good, or every human is good, what do they mean? Do they mean that? What does that even mean? You have good dispositions? Well, I don't know. Some people have good ones, some people have bad ones. Humans as such have good dispositions. What does that even mean? When we speak of good and bad, obviously we're speaking after there's good and bad humans, right? It doesn't even make sense to say everyone is bad, some good, when you mean to say, well, humans are good at humaning. Well, yeah, I guess they should be good at humaning, or at least should be possible to them to be good at humaning, but that doesn't make them good humans. What are you even saying? Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to mean that. I agree that that vart, what you're saying, is a true vart. I don't think it matches very well to this prioritization of the interior. I don't see that that's what someone's saying when he says you have to do the Shema. You have to have a good mean and well, or have a good intention, or have a good ratzin, have a good will. Those are not the same thing as what you're saying. Right? That's something else. So what does it mean? Do you know what it means? I really wanted to go out to that yid and ask him, well, could you like tell me a mushal of what should I do because of your drisha? Like, what do you mean? But I realized that it would not be nice, so I didn't. And I'm like thinking about this all week. What does this mean? And then I discovered what it means.
Maybe it would be very nice.
It might have been very nice. It's true. It's hard to know. It's a new yid. I don't know him very well yet, so I don't know. I have to learn him more.
No, it's like you see a person that's limping and you could fix it.
That's true, but that's a different shmus, so we'll talk about that.
Because you're not internally good or you are internally good?
Why I don't do that? No, it's true, it has to do with the mitzvah techocha, it's a very complicated discussion. I had a sheet about this in Mansi and Eshchoydesh, I don't know, I didn't send you the sheet, but we'll talk about that. It's a different baya, not the one that I'm talking about right now. That's Shampin, we'll talk about it again, because it's very important. Remind me if I don't, write on your notes that I should. Now, I want to say something else. So I'm wondering, now you remember that one of the Yisoides of our Shid is that everything has to make sense, including all the nonsense. I don't know if you already know this, right? We say that it can't be that all the people until 1992 were crazy. It also can't be that people since 1992 are crazy. Right? We're always trying to understand what is the... There's some puzzle here. Something very weird happened to cause all the people since 1772 or 1992, whenever that happened, whenever what we call modernity happened to them, whenever that is, we have to understand what is this. There's some puzzle, something very weird. You must come to my problem.
The first time I hear this.
Got the internality, externality.
Yeah, so no, for some reason,
we're hearing this
to most stuff. People, so this yid that said the drush b'shashit, it's not his fault. It's a few hundred years that people are saying this drush. He repeated it, someone's drush. And if you go back even a few hundred years more than that, nobody says this drusha. Of course, people read that into it, but when you actually read it, you see that it's always somehow that pshat, right? It's a hinkadigat pshat. It's not. It doesn't really work. It doesn't really read very simply. If you learn how to read things simply, you see that it doesn't read simply in any of the earlier sources.
What?
These Torahs about the inner will and things like that.
Oh, like in the Dalma
Mungan. I think there's a problem that the world...
That's just one example.
The world of thoughts is very different than the world of things. Right?
Okay.
Which may prompt you to assume that... Or try to, I guess, figure out a little bit more about the thinker. Right? But the thinker, if it can't be characterized in terms of, I guess, the external world or the world of things... You sort of have to make it into something else.
Okay, so
at least how I kind of maybe.
So explain what you mean when I hear someone saying something that doesn't make sense to me. I should do what?
Yeah. So this is something that I tried to think about for a little bit, and I don't have it so clear myself. But I think that when you have, if you have a certain concept of what things in the world are, right? Let's call it just raw material.
I understand.
Right? And then you have this world of thoughts that you have
that
to...
It doesn't match to that.
Yeah, that you have
people
to
are saying all kind of things that you don't know what they're referring to.
You have to find a new model for, right? Thoughts doesn't fit into the model of the world of things. You have to, besides reconciling thoughts, you also have to... Or maybe you have to collapse that into some kind of thinker, right?
Oh, I would say...
This thinker has to be something like very... very distant from the world of things and almost entirely non-participating, which makes you make it into a full type of thing. So, and then you end up with, like, the easiest way to do this is, okay, so whoever is the thinker of all these thoughts is the you, right? That would be you, whoever this thought belongs to, the thought of the chair, whoever that thought of the chair belongs to.
But how does he get to the thought?
Wait, you already so you're explaining why people say this. You're answering the question. Yeah. So wait, let me finish my reason why we have to answer this question.
I don't know if that's a good reason, but that's what I thought.
No, we're getting somewhere. We're getting somewhere. I agree. I think you jumped one step ahead in my Malach of Mashir. You understand my question? We're still up to this level of state of the question. So I hear all these stories. People have been saying these stories for some time now. They have not been saying them forever. And it seems to mean something to them. I don't know exactly what. I think it's hard to spell out exactly what. Inherently, we'll try to explain that. And I also have to explain what happened that this started to seem to make sense to people. Right? In other words, like you said, I never said it like this. It's true. It's still true that nobody is Meshigah. Kayin is not Meshigah. Yedan is Meshigah. But Kayin is not Meshigah. Right? Nobody is Meshigah in the sense that that's why the only reason why I can't go to that person. Because I have to, in Chabad, they say, can't give a guy another head. You can give my guy a hand, a shovel, a lot of things. You can't give a guy another head. Which would mean the way in which he sees the world. You could do that. That's what a Rebbe does. But not in a day, and not in a month. Not in a year. So, in order for him to my question to even make sense to that person, I would need to break a lot of ice, to open a lot of things, for him to be able to see the world from the way where I'm coming from. Now, my thing where I'm coming from is that you have to be able to see the world, like, first, we're going to get into what you're saying, but first, before that, I thought you were saying this, the world the way it is, and then why, from different people's perspectives, they get stuck in different ways. Like, for example, you remember the story of the blind people and the elephant, right? Very famous story that explains perspectivism, right? Very Indian mushal of an elephant. Remember the story? You don't remember the maisa?
The stomping?
But I know why it's about an elephant, for the same reason the philosopher has it about a table.
Exactly. There's an alternate Indian mushal about an elephant. There are a bunch of blind men that they're surrounding an elephant. Now, they don't know what an elephant is. They never saw an elephant. They were blind from birth. So one guy says, standing by its tail, and says, this is a thing with a long and fuzzy tail. The other guy standing by its nose says, this is some kind of long pipe. The other guy standing by its foot is like, this is a big fat pillar, and so on. And the other guys, some guy can see it, but they can only see one end of it. They say, this is a big gray mass. So everyone is saying the truth. Then comes one guy can see and says, this is an elephant. You just saw the tail, and you saw the head, and you saw the nose, and you saw the foot, right? This is a good explanation of why perspectivism, meaning when people speak things from their perspective, it's partial, because they're blind to what they're really seeing. They don't even know that they're seeing an elephant. But if you, what we're looking for always is to open your eyes, right? That's what philosophy is for. That's what thought is for, to really see what is, right? And then if you see what is, you will have to, by definition, be able to explain everyone's mistakes. This is also something that we learned from Aristotle. Aristotle always says, nobody makes mistakes. People only are partially right. Especially smart people. There's some crazy people that can somehow make real mistakes. That would be a big question. But usually people, the reason they say something is because they're looking at something from one perspective, and now when we're talking, this is a physical muscle, but we're talking conceptual things, because their way their concepts are constructed forces them to see things from a certain perspective. That leads them to certain problems, right? Certain aporia, certain puzzles, which cannot be resolved from their perspectives. Like Rikvegas Kashas, right? All Rikvegas Kashas are right. Everyone knows. Everyone has a good Kashas. Not all of his Kashas, by the way. But a big, large percentage of them, they're good Kashas. But what they show is that Kravaiga didn't understand anything. Has a shown Kravaiga. You understand what I'm saying, right? Remember this. But Kravaiga's kasha is always a good kasha.
It's like a very big kasha.
It's always, if you accept all of his assumptions, of which there are always a lot that he doesn't even sometimes realize or doesn't spell out, his question, you can't budge it. You can't move it. You can make up a funny teretz like some Achrayim do, but that's, everyone understands it's not a good teretz. You can make another Akimta. The real answer, you have to dissolve it. What you mean, in other words, you have to show why, where we got to this, and why none of this means any of it. This reality is something entirely different. Then the kasha doesn't start. It's like the kasha either doesn't start or doesn't end. There's no world, right? This is one of Rav Nachman's words. There's no world in which the kasha is a good kasha and the teretz is a good teretz. That's not at all such a good mush, maybe, for what I'm trying to get at. What I'm trying to get at is that when we see the full picture, we also explain the mistakes. Very important to decide. If your philosophy doesn't explain why everyone else is crazy, and in precisely what way they're crazy, that's a bad understanding, because then you're not understanding the world. Because you're understanding the part of their full picture of reality is why the elephant causes, like you understand why the guy by the foot is a foot, because there is a foot. And you also understand why he doesn't see more, because there's some blocking it. For some reason there's a piece of meat on the other side that makes you only see the foot, and so on. Right? Stimmt? Right. Now, in the same way, we have to explain what is it that causes everyone to see only, to see this, some internal kind of you or will. I think usually it boils down to will, some kind of wanting, some kind of internal state of mind, feeling something in the person. And then they identify this as all the good, or the main good thing. And they think that the Shekhinah can be shown in it even, it's such a good thing. And for me, this, none of this makes any sense, because firstly, I don't even know what that is. And also, if it is, I think it's incoherent, because wanting to do something means to do something. Got what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I have the story. I'll tell you the secret. And at least Chad doesn't know of anyone else that explained this so well as me before. Doesn't mean anything. But people did explain it, not in the Jewish context, but people did explain it. And Charles Taylor probably explained more or less this, and other people. So people did explain it, but not enough for us to make sense. So we're going to do it right now. And this is a new book that we're going to write, a new movement in Yiddishkeit that's going to resolve all the problems because of this basic thing. You remember from a long time ago, all the way before with the magician.
Yeah, but then you need a specific model, right, for how this. What I was trying to explain was not this set the stage.
Yeah, you were explaining why this is. Yeah, yeah, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it. Well, not entirely in your way, but I'll get to it. Yeah, that's Kant. What you were trying to explain, why we get this. Yeah,
the shift.
Mm-hmm. The Copernican revolution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's start somewhere simpler for my purposes. I have what you're trying to say. You'll remember the old story, very old story, which is hard to even tell to people nowadays because they're never always going to misinterpret the first part of it. But I hope that everyone that listened to enough of our classes and knows enough of what we're teaching knows already this. You already know. Today I saw a book. One of these books that's written for teenagers that are not very smart, but a little smart, to defend Yiddishkeit to them. If you're a little bit smart, then you right away see that it's fallacious arguments mostly. But for people that are a little smart, maybe it helps. If you're very dumb, then you don't need the book. So I'm not sure who the book is for. But anyways, with this book, it's explained, and what he explains is true, but also because of Nebuchadnezzar's blindness, he can't explain it correctly. Explained that everything in the world depends on one thing, if there is a God. And if there is a God, then things have a purpose. Also, something that you have to help me. I had a dream this morning about that. There's going to be you heard that there's a meaning crisis. You're not on YouTube enough. There's a meaning crisis. Did you hear of it? There's many crises, like a Shidduch crisis, the Dieris crisis, whatever crisis. I don't know what other crises there are. Tariff crisis. Yeah. There's a meaning crisis. There's a lack of meaning in the world. Meaning.
Meaning.
What did the theory guy say?
I thought it was a meeting because everyone's meeting. Always having meetings.
No, they're always having meetings. That's because of the meaning crisis. There's a meaning crisis. Did you hear of it? So I had a dream that the government set up an office of meaning. And they're going to give out meaning to everyone. The communists said everyone should have the equal amount of meaning. And the capitalists said, no, everyone should have as much meaning as they deserve. And so on. That's going to be the new ministry. Ministry of meaning. Mr. Adam Ashmut, exactly. And they're giving out, and wherever they find some shtut with not enough meaning, they send a big truck with meaning. So, this is what I dreamt in the morning. And
buckets of the chalom, like the shluch.
The good dreams are always like right before you wake up, when you're halfway asleep on a halfway awake.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out, like, how is they going to give out the meaning? I woke up with the question, like, is it going to be a supernatural? Does this mean, like, they're going to somehow give meaning to things? Or is this, like, some physical way? I couldn't figure out how the story continues. That's a meaning, Misrada meaning, giving up meaning. Misrada Mashmaut. Okay, Rabbi Yisai, Bekach, Anachnu Machrizim, Al Misrad Mimshalti Chadash, Misrada Mashmaut. Kol mi shechasar lo Mashmaut, Yavo v'yir Hashem l'tor, v'yikabel, bedyuk kama Mashmaut shu tzarich.
It's filled out a few forms, but besides...
Of course, you got to fill out a lot of forms. Okay. Now, Tachlis, there's a meaning crisis. And this Yid said that Why do all the Darshanim speak in this tongue? Can you explain to me?
Which tongue?
I don't know. Go on YouTube. All the Yiddish Darshanim, they all speak like this. And this Yid said that everything depends on one question. If there's a God, and if there's a God, then he created the world for a reason, and therefore everything has a meaning. And if not, then nothing has a meaning, and then, therefore, you don't have to go to yeshiva tomorrow morning. That's basically this guy's derusha, and he wrote 900 pages about it, somehow. Now, this Yid is right, 100%. Ma'abaya, that is backwards, right? Not that if there's a God, there's a meaning. If there's a meaning, there's a God. Or one way of saying it, right? What do I mean? That in the olden days, everyone understood. I mean, not everyone. This was discovered by Socrates and maybe by Avraham Avinu. That's what it says in the Heilige Sefer HaKodesh Feiro. That it doesn't make sense to talk about the world without explaining what it's for. Any natural thing, not because it's a God that gives it meaning, right? Because to explain what something is, you need to explain what it's for. Remember? This is called by the fancy Latin, fake Greek word, teleology. But we're not going to say that word because it doesn't help us. We're going to say the word meaning. Meaning is the same exact thing. Right? What is the meaning of something? What it's for? You cannot explain a table without explaining what tables are for. That's just what it is. And therefore, the what forness of things, which we call the tachlis, or the end, or the completion, or all kinds of words that we call this thing, the goal, is more what they are than what they're made out of, and what made them into what they are, and what they are right now, and so on. Nachon? Remember this? Right? Everyone knows about this very basic stuff. This is the fourth cause of Aristotle, and also
first one.
Something, what?
And the first one.
The first and the second and the first, I don't know, the first, one of the famous four causes. But the important thing is that this is what defines most definitive of what a thing is, for sure for a living thing. Living thing is the kind of things for which their form and their end and their what they are the same thing. Okay, now, in Maskim, remember? Everyone remembers this. And now, according to that, this is the important thing, right? According to that, for example, the important thing that this does is that theology, or what God is, or the foreignness that everything is for, well, that's one definition of God, and what is physics, what things are, just science, and ethics, which is making things into what they are, having everything complete, achieve its completion, are the same kind of thing, right? What everyone know or heard, you probably heard of David Hume, who said that there's something called, later called the naturalistic fallacy. Is does not imply ought. That's nonsense. Because ought is just the completion of the is. Nachon? There is a science, that's why in Sefer Mishle, knowledge equals goodness. Remember? And then nobody understands that nowadays, because they think that knowledge is knowing what things are, and goodness is being good. What's that got to do anything with love? No, goodness is just things being completely what they are, working well. Right? Or we say in different language, the good and the well are the same thing. Right? The being good and acting well are the same thing for everything. Nachon, everyone knows this. Agdama chashiva for kalatere kele. Then, and this is a historical story, but it's not really a historical story. That's why we should stop saying it as a historical story. Although it's true that this history happened, but it's also not true that this is only a historical thing. There were always people that didn't understand this. That's the Avodah Zarah that Avraham Avinu had to burn their getchkes. You have to understand that's also what they thought. It's not a new one, like... some goyim came. There's another kind that he called this the Yetzer Hara that thinks otherwise. Then take out the whole historicism out of our story, because otherwise we get into historicism, that's for sure. So, but there's one way of saying the story is historically. I don't like it, but we're going to say it like this right now. Later came other people. Eberosham, Francis Bacon with his new organon, new science. And later other people, David Hume very famously, and other people. And they said there isn't any force in the world. The world doesn't have a meaning. The world has a cause but not a meaning. Or they redefined the word cause to not include the word meaning, which is a very weird thing to do, but that's what they did. Remember?
And what would be a difference?
And, wait, the difference is that we don't explain things by what they're for, we explain things by what pushed them into where they are. Instead of saying that a tree is something that's trying to be a tree, trying not in a human sense, right? When we say the word trying, right away you assume that there's a thinker in there, a separate soul or something that thinks. No, a tree is the kind of thing that tends towards being a full tree. That's what it means to be a tree. you can't understand the truth. Now they say, no, a tree is just what happens to be when there's all these forces pushing the tree into being a tree, into something, into nothing, because there's no being, no thing as being a tree. Okay, that's the other shitta. And it's actually not a natural way of thinking, just to be clear. Most people do think that there are ends in nature. Just get hacked into their head by their science teacher, that's not such a thing. But normal people still speak of ends in nature. Of course, it's complicated. What kind of ends? What are the ends? Every time, this is what one of the big fallacies that book, for example, makes. The fact that there are ends doesn't mean that the end is to learn Gemara Tosfos. No, Jarek's one of the two things. Then we have to do real science, find out what the end of everything is. That is the true science, as the Rambam explains in Takdum HaPeresh HaMishnah Be'al Shnei Ma'amelech, Shnei Ma'amelech Vaydaber Al Eitzavodim. It doesn't mean he knew every tree. No, he knew what every tree was for, which is what knowing every tree was, which is why it's the same kind of knowledge as knowing the Torah, which is knowing the good for everything. Okay, now, Yechap. But in any case, and if the good is causally prior to the partial existence of things, which tends toward the good, that's what Torah Kadolah means. But anyways, that would be a more platonic way of saying things. The point is now, we're going way too fast. I have to go back to my mode of saying it.
So basically, it has causes without purpose.
Exactly. There are pushes without purpose. Their purpose is not a real thing. Now,
and cause just means where it comes from.
Exactly, or its history. That's where that's the oymek of why everything turns into history. Because cause explaining just means where it's from. But don't explain what it is and where it's going to. That's why I'm against history. Because I'm for what where things are going to, or what they are, which is what they are is explained by where they're going to, and not where they come from. Because where they come from is true. It's not like I deny that reality, just that I deny that being the most important thing, fact about things, the most explanatory fact about things. And I think that's as obvious to everyone that thought for 5 seconds and stopped being brainwashed. Now, but this is just me doing rhetoric. Of course, there's real, these people are smarter than I'm pretending now. And there are reasons why they thought all these things, and you gotta learn this very seriously. But I'm just doing a short overview for my book. This is just a review of the book, remember. This is not the book. Now, if there are no causes in nature, then God becomes a different kind of God. Very important. Theology looks very different, right? Then we get into the question, something called intelligent designer, which is really a Shein Dalet. The intelligent designer is Metatet, not God, not our God. You know? Have you ever heard that the Jews are pro-intelligent design? That's not true. There is an intelligent designer for the world, but he's a Shein Dalet. Okay, not a Shein Dalet. You could call it a Nus, a Malach, a Sfira, intelligence, not God, not the one. Very important. Very important. It's the same idea. Relative to God, everything is a Shein Dalet. So, you understand? If you worship that, you're worshiping a false God. Rabbi, all the Baxi B'Chiva people who are worshiping the intelligent designer are worshiping a false God who has a body. Because they imagine him as having plans the way that we have plans. And they imagine the world having meaning in a fake way. Not inherently. There are no imminent ends. World by itself isn't for anything. That's what they say. We need a God to make it for something. Like an artificial thing. Like a table doesn't have in itself the tableness. It has wood. Wood has woodness in it. Tables only have tableness by imposition, by people that make them into tables. There's no such a thing as nature. The world is external, has only external causes. And God is some kind of mind outside the world that gives it purposes. You know what I'm saying? Not he doesn't really give it purposes even. It's only serving him in some way. Which means that God needs things. Which means that their God is a fake God. Okay, very simple. I'm not going. This is only a summary. So if you don't understand it, come to a different sheet. This is not a sheet on theology, but you should just know that this is what makes the God. This therefore says all the other. This is also the reason why there's only two options in modernity. Either you can be a deist or a pantheist, or a Megashim. These only three options. That's the reality. There's either deists, people that think that basically there's no God in the world. There's only a God that, like the watchmaker Moshe, who made the watch, but then the watch, so to speak, works by itself. Because they don't understand any kind or other kind of cause, a formal cause or a final cause. The watchmaker is only an efficient cause, right? He only put the piece of the watch together. He didn't invent the idea of watches, and he doesn't the why of the four of the watches, okay? But God is a great watchmaker. That's Newton's shitta, or one deist shitta, or if you say that there's a deism plus miracles, which means God sometimes breaks the watch. That's what most modern Orthodox people believe. Deism plus God is a watchmaker that sometimes intervenes to break the watch. Very weird shitta. But that's one option. I'm giving a very short overview, Shiklali. Second chitta is atheism, no God, or something like that. Third chitta is pantheism, chassidus. God is the Milwach itself. Okay. Those are the three chittas that are possible, according to, sort of. But was the three shittas possible according to more complicated? More is more complicated. But also, see, this is more complicated. I'm doing a great reduction over here. But those are the three shittas possible according to the theory that there are no ends in nature. Those are the three kinds of theology, and you could know that all of, every modern religious person, besides for me, is one of these three things: either a deist, or a deist plus miracles, which is a weird kind of deist, or an atheist, which are many religious people are also, or a pantheist. No, that's the options. And pantheist just collapses everything. There's everything. There's only God, and that's fine. That's fine. But he understands it in a material way, which means his God is also a big question if his God is material and what's going on. But okay, let's not get into this. Now, a third thing, this is the Hilchos theology that happens. What happens to ethics? This is where we have to get to today. Of course, everything is connected, but what happens to ethics? What happens to the good, to the human good? Here, there's something very weird. Why there's something very weird, like Shmuley noticed. Here, there's something very weird, because, and give me one of these seltzers things. Yeah. Here, there's something very weird. Why? Explain you why. Because if things or activities, things in the world, things in the world don't have ends, they don't have meaning. No actions have meaning by themselves. In other words, if you look at an action or you look at a thing, you cannot explain from what it is what it's for. This is the basic opinion of all modern people. Or of the Yetzer Hara. Let's forget saying Hara. I'm going to stop. We're going to flip the word. That's what the Yetzer Hara holds. The Sutton, from the first day, he held like this. And therefore, but we have this weird thing called human beings. Very weird thing. Like Descartes said, humans are an exception. Everything is extension besides for mind. The mind, or the human mind, there's only human mind according to him, maybe God's mind, but there's only human mind besides for that. And that mind has this weird thing called intentions. Now an intention is something that does not follow the laws of physics. Not only talking about free will and all these things. Intentions don't make sense in the physical picture that we just discussed. Right? Intention means a thing being about something that is about another thing. Make sense? When I want something or mean something, right? Meaning means I mean something, am I about something else? Now that doesn't exist. Only in the old shit that all things are about something else or about their own final state or something like that. But nothing is about something else. Everything is just what it is. Being about something else is not a physical thing. You can't see it. You can't explain it by a pushing cause or a pulling cause. It can only be explained by a kind of formal cause or by a kind of final cause. Make sense? Because literally what a final cause means is being towards something else, being about something else. Right? Aiming at something else in a real way. Obviously humans do this. This is a weird trait. Obviously human minds do this. We form intentions and we act, we make plans, we act towards other things, or at least we think we act towards other things. Whether we act towards other things, that's going to be the machlokes. But we think that we act towards other things. We have dreams, we have plans, we have goals, we have aims, we have what we call wants and wills and desires and wishes. All of these things, they all break down, boil down. At least they all have the attribute of being about other things, or not even about, they're towards other things, right? Towards things in the future, towards even myself in the future, right? And myself in the future doesn't exist, so it can't be that myself in the future is pushing me towards that, because it doesn't exist. It only exists in my head. So we end up with this very weird situation, right? Very famously called the mind-body problem in Cartesianism. But, and Descartes knew that this is what caused him the problem, he didn't invent it. This is very clear, there's not some conspiracy theory I'm inventing. The mind-body problem came to be because of the denial of intention in real things, in external things, right? Now, stimmt? Makes sense? The story is correct. So therefore, something very interesting happened. Something very interesting happened. So there's basically only two solutions to this problem. Or again, there's two or three solutions. I don't have very clearly what the three solutions would be. But something like this. So what is the human good? In the olden days, the human good was not different than any other good. Right? The human good is the best way for a human to be. The complete way, the fullness of humanity, what we call eudaimonia, happiness, which is just the best way for a human to be. Since there's no such thing as the best in the reality, so it can't be that. That we lose that ability. Now, we are left with all kinds of other things. Some of them are like shiraim of that, and some of them, that's one way of being left, like with what's left over from happiness without happiness meaning this. Or we end up with something even more than we had before in some sense. Let me explain. Okay, so one thing, this is basically the two kinds of ethics that exist in modernity. Now you understand something very interesting. You probably heard that there's only two kinds of ethics. One is called utilitarianism, and the other one is called deontology. Okay, the third one is virtuous ethics, which is the correct one. But in classic modernity, there's only two kinds of ethics, right? If you don't know this, you should take a crash course somewhere. No. In any case, there's two kinds of ethics. Utilitarianism is Bentham's shit, and the thing that Nietzsche really liked to make fun of always. And which is that, of course, we don't have happiness in the real way, in the Aristotelian way, which is the definition of the human being the best kind of human that he could be, because there's no such a thing as the best of anything. But this thing that people were talking about seems to still exist, right? This is what I call the remnant shit, or the shiraim shit. In other words, people still feel happy sometimes, and sometimes don't feel happy. Or they feel pleasure sometimes, or sometimes don't feel pleasure. So therefore, we say, what is good? Pleasure. That still exists. Feeling happy. An internal sensation. Something analogous to a sensation. Not a sensation, a physical, perceptive sensation, which is another problem, but something, an internal sensation, an emotion. What did they call it? A feeling. There's another word that they used to use, the people. A passion, a feeling, all this kind. That's what David Hume said. Reason is the slave of the passions. Remember, this is how we got to this. There's still passions. I still want things in the sense of some want arises in me somehow. It's mysterious what this even means because it can't be explained. But it's a feeling. It exists. Okay? You'd say it's subjective, but it's something that exists. And therefore, that is what you end up in saying. So what is good? So even if you want to make this into somehow sound good, so just being about your own feelings of happiness and pleasure sounds really evil, although some people just bite the bullet and say that. If you want to be nicer, you say everyone's happiness. For some reason, I should care about everyone else. I don't know why, but we still have this mentality that happiness has, ethics has something to do with other people also. So we got to pretend that it's also about everyone being happy, but in the end, everyone being a hedonist, right? Everyone, hedonist, I don't mean claiming that happiness is the good, because no such thing as the good. A really even weirder kind of hedonist than ancient hedonist, right? The ancient hedonist still believes something called the good, it just says human good is defined by pleasure. A modern hedonist says, there's no such thing as good. I know that this makes me feel good. Right? People literally say this all day. If you go in any yeshiva, you hear people saying this, and here even people pretending to say this in a good way, right? So therefore, if Torah makes you feel good, you should learn Torah. So, subjectivity, sometimes called subjectivity. This is one solution. Of course, this is a remnant solution, is what I'm saying. It only has any moral force because people still, the old people also talk about feeling good and being happy, but they meant being happy in an objective way. And now I mean being happy changes its meaning from being the best kind of human being to being someone that has certain feelings. And then we get the question of, how's it called? Hamish thought experiment about what if I just have a machine that injects drugs to you all day and makes you feel pleasure. Is that what you mean? And the utilitarians, what?
The dopamine problem.
Yeah, the utilitarians have and tie themselves up in knots to figure out why that would not be good. Some of them have answers to this, but this is what you end up with. Okay. Now, the other shitta, that's one shitta, that's a good shitta, no yid really holds of it. Everyone understands that that's not really ethics. I think that everyone does, besides for a few weirdos. Maskim? Just pursuing what feels good.
It comes with an altruist twist that tries to
altruism is this weird thing which says you should care about other people feeling good, but why is that better than me feeling good? It's not really, that's where altruism comes in. Of course, ancient ethics is not altruistic.
Or you stack it with, it has to be modular, you stack it with something ultimately.
Okay, so you end up saying that there's some, what you end up saying is that there's a sentiment, that was what I was looking for, moral sentiment, right? There's a sentiment that says that I feel good when you feel good. That turns out to be ethics. Ethics is just one more feeling. That's really that's what's called emotivism, right? Okay, but that's basically the modern theory. Or one English theory, okay? Like Nietzsche used to say, nobody wants to be happy, only Englishmen want to be happy. Okay, but he means this kind of happiness. You impose this very specific idea of what feels good to you, what's called sometimes conscience, right? And our teacher, Elizabeth Anscombe, wrote in her very important article in Modern Moral Philosophy that, again, someone called Joseph Bishop, Butler, I don't remember, that was all about conscience. If you read certain modern people, like Rav Hirsch, some Jews, especially in a certain period, everyone's very talking about this inner conscience, which is also one interpretation of this inner thing. Like, everyone knows internally what's good. And then Freud said, yeah, that's your mother's voice. But anyways, and she says, well, seriously, I know people that internally really want to kill everyone. That's not a very good... Like, they just all imagine that everyone just automatically has this, like, sense of ethics. That's not what... Not real, not true. But that's... That, but really, that's just one more feeling. There's no reason to think
you're
that
really
that's...
You're not sure this is like...
Yeah, it's really not
this,
true.
This is games. Like, you could say it nicely in a book that you know people that want to...
No, there are...
I think, right, even the murderers, like when Ted Bundy was interviewed, like, he knew that it's not good, right?
Okay.
No, I just wanna, I think even the guy that wants to, he knows, he has an internal compass.
Okay, I don't think that's true, but not gonna get into that right now. My point is more important. The more important point is that just one more feeling. There's no reason to think that feeling is more important than any other feelings. Only again, there's a feeling that says that for that doesn't tell you what good is. Okay.
No, but once again, hold on. I think we're also confusing the word feelings here. There's two feelings that are going on.
Feeling here means a sensation. That's all it could mean. That's what it means in
right,
this
shit. Right, and then there's like a feeling like, you know...
Yeah, it's the same thing. That's what it is. There isn't another kind of feeling. That's what I'm trying to say. There's a thought.
Right.
Like, thoughts are about things. But if there's no such a thing as goodness, then your thought is not about anything, so it turns out to a feeling, right? The difference between a thought and a feeling is that a thought is about something and a feeling is not about anything.
Dude,
besides the feeling.
Hold on. Can we not run a second?
No, we can't. We have to go quickly. We don't have time. It's already time.
Why is the thought of me not
cookie,
hurting
okay.
you...
Yeah, yeah. Let's not argue now because...
I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
You understand what I'm saying, but now let's move on.
Don't.
Okay, if you don't, then come after this and ask Cassius.
Okay.
First adaptation. Okay. Now. Because I'm just going to end up explaining to you at length, but I don't have time for that. It's very simple. What I have to say is like this. The other shit is what we call... what's the other shit? Not... maybe this is something what, like what you're saying, I'm not sure. But the other shit is what we call the ontology, okay? The ontology is obedience of the moral law. Okay? That's what Kant said, and that's what Litvak say. First shit is no Yid, I know it really says. Maybe there's some weird Jew that says that. Like, from Jew, I mean, like, religious person. But the other shit is basically what every Litvak says. Well, Chassidim sometimes say hedonism, but then they just say your real feeling is Hashem. But I don't know if that counts anymore, because that sounds very much closer to the objective happiness in the end. But it might be, in some sense. Some Chassidim, I know some people that interpret Chassidim that way, but I don't think it's a classic interpretation, so I don't know. It's an interesting question. And I wonder if... Yeah, it's very complicated. Okay. But the other shit is to say that there's some... This shit also doesn't have a source and also ends up relying on something like what you're describing, that they're closer to the way you're describing it. Not a feeling that makes me feel... I feel fuzzy inside, but something like I feel outside something. I feel something imposing on me. It still ends up being kind of a feeling. But that's a criticism of like Kantianism, that it's also a kind of emotivism. But it's something... It has to be something in some sense from the outside, or it's something like Kant says you give your own law. But a law is, by definition, something stronger than you. And you have some kind of idea or obedience to a law which doesn't say anything. The law is not saying anything, right? The law is not the fact, right? In the old way, the law is only the fact that this is good. You might not know it, so I'm letting you know that this is the good way to be a human being. And in this way, there's not such a thing as good people or good anything, but there's such a thing as acting in a good way. Now, what this does, and the second way is really where I'm heading. What this does is, that it makes the relation between the action and the goodness of it very far, right? Because remember, if there's just things that are good, that have ends, then there's good things and bad, good actions and bad actions. Good actions are the ones that lead the thing to the end, and bad actions are the ones that destroy it. Very simple. It's the din in the action. It's not a din in the intention. But if there's no such a thing, but we have some kind of idea, like a very general idea, something like following the moral law or going against your base feelings is the good, right? Doing things for the purpose of following the law and not for the purpose of being happy, right? If that's the Kantian kind of shit, the ontological shit that says that the goodness of moral action is in following some kind of recognition of a moral law, of a moral truth, or a moral goodness, which is not connected with what you want, it's not connected with what you think and so on. It's connected with some kind of obedience to a moral law. It ends up being kind of obedience.
Has to do with society?
No, not society. Society is just one more person, a lot of people. It's a God. It ends up being God. Kant said explicitly that this is God. God is this. So one of the reasons that he believes in God is because he feels that there's a moral law. And God, there's no way to explain that it's not a God. There's ways of doing this atheistically also, but it ends up being something like a God. Now,
but is there a way to like, challenge this? If like you live, let's say in Africa, there's one type of way.
I'm not worried about this. I'm not worried about this right now. There's different problems. Those are different problems. All these shittas are going to have these kind of problems. All I'm trying to get at the form of the shit. What I'm trying to get at here is that now, if you have this idea of what good is, and this is what every lit, like many chassidim also think what a good is, then your connection with it, the way in which your action is good, becomes something very internal. What do I mean internal? When I mean internal, I mean precisely this thing that humans have and doesn't really exist in the world. Right? Remember, according to this shitta, there is something humans have, which is subjectivity, or being about, being the ability to be about something, the ability to be towards something, the ability to want, we could say, right? Now we call this word wanting. The ability to want or to desire. No, desire was always a specifically way of human way of being towards something. But now humans are the only things that are towards something. So now desire or intention is this very specific and weird and inexplicable in some sense human kind of thing. Maybe this is the human separate soul that can do it. That can be about something else, that can be wanting some other thing that doesn't really exist. Now the wanting doesn't either exist. It's only like a mental fact. It's only something internal. And now this turns out to be the only thing that can make you good. Because just doing something, if you do it to a good thing for the wrong reasons, is not even shalai lishma. Remember, the whole thing of shalai lishma v'lishma doesn't really work in this shit. It's become very hard to explain. And you notice that many people have a big problem explaining it. While the Rambam thought that this is simple and the most obvious moral factor is. Right? Why? Because according to this new shita, the only thing that makes things good is the way in which you intend being good by it. That's what the goodness consists of. The intending being good, or intending obeying this universal moral law, or intending to be a universal rule, all kinds of formulations of this same thing. But the only way in which what you're doing is connected to that, which your action is connected to that, is in this internal state, or almost a feeling. It might be more than a feeling if you want to say it that way. But it's just a feeling that I'm doing the good thing. Because besides your feelings, and we don't have explanation for feelings, because feelings is this weird human thing nothing else has. There's no feelings in the universe, right? This universe doesn't care about you, you know this statement? The universe doesn't have feelings, only you have feelings, right? Only humans have aboutness, only humans have intentionality. Now, according to this shit theory. And therefore, the only way something can be good, and only humans can be morally good, right? There's no way of saying that something is good or bad in a real way, only humans. And not specifically human intention, which is this weird, inexplicable, magic thing that humans obviously still have, even after the theory doesn't make sense, they still have it, right? So now we end up with something very weird. We end up with this theory that what the Siyat said was Pashal Shidas, that the only place where God is, or the only good thing, is the intention to be good. It's a kind of empty intention, or we could say it's not empty because it's obedience to the moral law. But that's the only...
That's the intention, the intender.
Right, but there's no... The link between the law and you doesn't exist, right? Because that's in your mind. The link is also in your mind, for sure, according to Kant, right? So the only thing that's really good is entirely in the human heart, and the human mind, and the human intention, human soul, however you want to call it. And now, firstly, this makes everything much worse. Like I said, Mitech Lishma stops making sense. Or it becomes a much bigger b'di'evet than it used to be, right? Because you remember, Maimonides explained Mitech Lishma v'lishma as the normal way of human training. Tachlashma means you do the thing as a kovishes yitzray, as in training level, where you do the thing but you don't entirely know why, you're doing it for the wrong why, but you're still doing a good thing, you're still a good person, your actions are still good. They're really good. They're really good because they're doing the good thing. They're doing the kind of things a good person would have done. Are they fully good? No, because what we call your internality, not good. Because in other words, you don't know why it's good. So you don't do it for the sake of itself. You learn for the sake of money. But learning is still really good. Because goodness is still a property of real things. So learning is still really good. It's you that are missing some part of the goodness. Your mind doesn't understand it. So you don't mean the learning, you mean something else. But that doesn't make it entirely not good. Versus according to the new shit, that when you learn for the sake of something else, that's totally worthless, like the Katskatepa said. It's entirely worthless. It might be worth in some weird way, all the Chassidus films start with the assumption, if you read any Chassidus text, you see, they all say, well, I heard that, but it doesn't happen. They all say this very weird statement. They say, well, our experience shows that it doesn't work. We need to add something to this. Because all the Litvaks never got to Lishma. That's what they say. And therefore we have to add Chassidus and Kav Chomet and all kinds of things. Because Lishma doesn't work. This is a statement arises because of the destruction of the understanding that it always works. According to the Aristotelian theory of habituation, being basic moral training, it always works. Because once you, I mean, I can't say always, there might still be this like proud where sometimes people stay by that stage always. But it works. Firstly, it's still really good. It's not that the goodness of the Petach Shlishma is only like Baal Shem Tov says, when you'll become Lishma, you'll be Malish Lishma, you know, these stories of Baal Shem Tov. It's, I mean, you can interpret that in the correct way, I'm not saying, but I'm explaining that there's really goodness in being pretend a good person. Because goodness is a property of things. That good person is not a fully good person, he's still a halfway good person, because you could say his heart is not good, only his actions are good. But actions are really good. They're really the ones that make a good person into a good person. That's what's done in the action, not in the person. But if you understand that there's no such thing as goodness in action, there's only goodness in the human heart, because actions by themselves don't have an end. They can't have a kavana. Now kavana becomes another word, kavana. It's very weird. Has a new interpretation in modernity than it had ever before. Kavana, if you read any ancient text, any medieval text about kavana, you'll see that the kavana is a din in the action. Kavana is a description of what you're doing. It's not a description of your internal state. How do I know this? You'll read every sugya of mitzvah kavana, you'll see that there's no shita that holds different than this. I'm making a real statement, so you could argue.
But
this solves most of the kashas about the sugya of mitzvah kavana, this is it. And the same thing about Melech Machsheves Azot and Melech Shabbos. There's none of these are about your internal state. They're all about what the action is. Because what explains an action, of course your internal state is part of it when there's human actions. Humans act by internal states. I'm not saying internal states don't exist. I think that the goodness is not contingent only on that like it is in modernity. The goodness is that this is a good thing because it's for a good purpose.
And the shtekel is with the Yerzayim Yishmutim, right? Because, like, no, what I mean,
But it's also incomplete independently, right? In that, on the flip
what's
side.
Incomplete? The action.
You have good intentions with no action.
Exactly, good intentions are the opposite. Exactly. According to the matter, of course, and good intentions, which are only an eternal state, and are not directed toward action, which is not a thing that even makes sense in the old system. It somehow makes sense in the new ones, because it's always in some way like this. Because then goodness is an eternal thing, it's just a feeling, or just kind of an disposition, or like an overcoming of your own egoism, or things like that. Those are entirely internal things. Overcoming your egoism, which is what people mad in modernity think is what makes good actions good, is an entirely internal thing. Nobody cares if you give to look at overcoming egoism or for egoistic purposes. Right? It's the action that cares. Therefore, when you read ancient descriptions of Shlo Lishma, it always has a different, there's always a description of the action that is different, and I think almost always, it's actually different. Someone who learns Shlo Lishma is learning in a different way than someone who's learning Lishma. It's not just he has a different thing in his mind. It's true that the reason he acts in a different way is because he doesn't understand the goodness of learning. So their difference is very simple. Someone who learns Shle Lishma is not for the purpose of learning, or maybe if learning itself is a purpose towards another purpose, doesn't matter. It's towards that. He's going to only learn as long as he gets money, and the other one is going to stop learning, right? The moment he doesn't get money, you're honored for it. So there's a real difference in the action. You can see the difference in what he's doing. It's not only a difference in his head. The Chassidish interpretation of Shla is entirely in your head. Because according to them, if you're learning for your own pleasure, for example, in other words, because you recognize yourself that it's God, that's also Shla Lishma. Because they end up with this entirely outside giving of purposes to the world, where the world is utterly empty of purpose, and only God gives it purpose, but doesn't really give it even, right? It's only purposeful in the sense that it's what God likes. Which is why that's either a pantheism or a Hakshama, or a physical God, a human-like God. You understand what I'm saying? Very simple. Very simple shtickle ta'il. And therefore, for example, we learned last week the Rambam of that Kol Masechil L'Shem Shemaim. Right? The Rambam talks about how you could be Ovid as Hashem with everything you do if you eat in order to learn, basically. Now, people think that this means that when you eat you have to think certain thoughts. It's nothing to do with that. Understand? It's not about your state of mind while you're eating. In other words, the intention, kavana, in the ancient world is the answer to the question why you're doing it. It's not the answer to the question what is in your head while you're doing it. You understand the difference? That's a very one line difference. In modern days, kavana, and most chassidish svarim, lishma, kavana, all these nice words mean what is in your head while you're doing it. And in the Rambam, it means why are you doing it? What's the answer to the question why you're doing
what
it?
What is in your head the whole day?
Which is why
sometimes last week I called it what is in your head the whole day. But does not mean in your head ever. It's the answer to the question. This is also the answer to Reb Chaim's theory on the Rambam. It's the answer to a lot of things.
So the answer to why now is the clapping before Megillah. Everyone should have
exactly.
It in mind. To be
exactly. That's Megillah. Nonsense. Exactly. Because
the state of the
you think I drove here for something else?
Of course. This Chaznish is trying to say this, but he doesn't have a way to say it. I don't know if it's a true answer. I think there's a simpler answer to that particular state. I'm just saying, it solves a lot of things. like you're saying, there's no such thing as you go to shul while you're reading the Megillah, because the mitzvah is lying in the Megillah. What do you mean I should have in mind? What should I have in my mind? Intention is not about having in your mind. Of course, you could call it having in mind. But that's just the word.
In a way.
It makes it weird.
No, it takes
away. Just to be clear, what is in your mind is very important. Your mind is an important organ. What you're thinking at every moment is an important thing to focus on, but not because of the din of kavana, because a whole different reason. Because your mind is an action in itself. You could have the good kavana shalal lishma. You could have kavana shalal shalal lishma. Because what you have in your, because the reason you're doing it is not because it's good, but because of some other reason. Understand?
It's like the Baal Shem with the shofar.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, remember, there's a lot of stories.
Right, you shouldn't have any kavunas. Right? Is that the kavunas just...
Yeah, I don't know, it's complicated what's going on in those stories. I can't, I don't know what you understand, and we'll have to go through the whole thing. But point is, this is very simple.
No, sometimes when you're stuck on those kavunas, okay, it actually takes away.
So this is very simple. Now we understand both why in the olden days, lishma is a din in the maise, lishma nicht ein din in dein kop. Lishma is a din in the maise. Star maise versus lishma, and star maise versus lishma. Of course, since humans act with their heads, it has something to do with your head, but it's not a din in what's in your head. And this is why, of course, modern people not only can't imagine God resting in anywhere besides their head, they can't imagine any goodness, which is really what they mean, besides for in their intention, which is a very weird thing, because it's kind of useless, and it leads to this weird thing. Everyone wants to be good. No, you don't want to be good. Wanting means wanting to do. What does that even mean? But if all goodness is in something, that somehow makes sense. It still doesn't entirely make sense. But that's why they end up thinking like that, because they must think like that. Now, I'm showing you why they're forced to think like that, because of their thought that there's no goodness in the world, in the real world, in the external world. So therefore, goodness has to be. So it can't be totally if what you do, because that's an external thing, and that's not really good. So it has to be what you do, and therefore it has to be that even if you do it, if you want to do something good and you never do anything good, you're still a good guy.
So how would you know much of it?
Even if you can...
That's what I discussed many times. That
even
means,
if you can...
In my theory, it means...
Even if you can conceptually divide them, you still have a correlation problem, right?
1 second.
That's what you're saying, right? Meaning, if I can somehow separate the intention from the action, I still need some sort of... Obviously, you have to at least say you don't want it enough or something.
That's what I would say. Well, that's what other people say.
I mean, even other people would say this, right?
Other people, they say such thing. But I'm saying that they're forced, but their theory forces them to say that the goodness is entirely in the internal state and not in the act.
Right, in the internal state.
Which is why they end up saying these funny things, exactly. And then they end up with this. This is a question for them most. They agree that there's a question.
And they make up the question.
I'm using that question to show that the whole thing is absurd. But they would say, I have to say this, and therefore I have to find an answer. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So they're not crazy. They're crazy. The main puzzle piece missing and the reason causing all this weirdness and the whole machlokes of Nefesh HaChaim and the Tanya or whatever it is about what Lishma is, it's all caused by the loss of Lishma in the real world. Since people stopped believing that the world is Lishma, they ended up pigeonholed into one of these two options. Either all Lishma is in your head, or everything is because God said so, which is based on Nefesh HaChaim's Shitta. Understand? Now, when you say it's on your head, then you end up with different problems, so therefore you have to say that your head is also God, all kinds of things. But that's the basic story. Just means, very simple, if, according to my theory, if a person has an actual disposition to doing things, doesn't mean that I'm sitting in my room and thinking of good thoughts. That's not what it means. It's like the Gemara says, nanas for the us. It has to be a nanas for the us. In other words, if I'm a kind of person that does tzedakah every year, but this year I have no money in my pocket, so for this year, I'm still a good person. But at some point I'm going to stop being a good person, by the way.
Because I'm really a doer of good.
Right. You really are a doer, just there's something external stopping you, blocking you. So you're still considered a good person.
Like, if I was never a doer, to, like,
you, exactly. You can't say, even Aristotle, there's Machlokes and Aristotle and Plato on this. Aristotle goes so far to say, if you never had money, you're never a Baal Tzedakah. If you once had money and today you don't have money, then we could say Machshav Toyg Shvechem Tzav Amasichav Dechilik. That's what the Rambam says. That's why the Torah has to promise you to have money, because otherwise you can't do mitzvahs. You can't be Baal Tzedakah. You need a body. That's what the Gaon said. You need a body to do mitzvahs. Otherwise, you could want to do mitzvahs, but that wanting is not interesting. That's the big chilek, and this is, I think, the reasoning why all this, why the Sachmad, all the things that we discussed.
And that's Moshe Rabbeinu's answer to the Malachim. Yes, Klim Yesh Bechem this, Klim Yesh Bechem that. In other words, have to be able
but
to do
that. That goes to a different discussion, because there is goods for a soul without a body. Just different activities. It's very interesting. When we say, these two things don't necessarily connect. That's why there is an ancient, like I said, Philo. Philo wasn't, isn't anything like I'm saying that how people think. Because what happens is, the question of what is good for a soul without a body is also to do something. We're very confused. We think that souls without bodies can't do anything. They do things. It's like thinking or knowing or maybe even wanting, all kind of things like that, which is a doing. The goodness of neshama without a gift is not that he is chulim, as if they mentioned, my nechulim tretit nesht. Etit. was did the retracht. That's also a masa. For a soul, it's a masa. Maybe for a body, it's not considered a masa. For a soul, it's not considered a masa. That's its activity. The goodness of everything is a kind of activity. It's just that it's not your kind of activity. So it's not, we don't, if you want to look for the kind of things, that's why this is weird. This is weird. Everyone would also tell you that what's in your head is very important. What's in your head is very important, not in your head, in your mind is very important, because those are the kind of things the soul as a soul, or the thinker as a thinker, the human as a human, in the real sense, is doing. Not because that's an internal thing, it's an external thing. Perhaps it's a masa. Machshuv hav a masa. Well, machshuv hav a masa, for the neshuva, machshuv is a masa. Machshuv ka masa. Because that's what it does. It doesn't do anything else. For a body, just thinking, their thinking has two meanings. Thinking is, here has two different meanings, right? Thinking means thinking to and thinking that, right? Or thinking A, right? Thinking to just means planning. That's just thinking roots, and therefore, that kind of thing doesn't make sense without a mass. But thinking of thing that thought that ends with the thinking, that's why, for example, according to the ancient thought, thinking thought about things that are temporary, it doesn't count as thinking, right? Thinking about masim, it doesn't have a ma'ala of thinking. The whole ma'ala of machshova, like that Tanya says, the ma'ala of machshova, that's a bigger dvaikis, which is just a ripoff of Aristotle, is only true for thoughts about true things. It doesn't work for halacha. This is the Tanya's big mistake from the perspective of Aristotle. It doesn't work from the perspective of halacha. There's an answer to this mistake. I'm not saying it's a mistake. I'm just saying from this perspective, it's a mistake. You can't say, I'm thinking about what to do with Shashnu and Kasapura. Then you're thinking about Shashnu and Kasapura. Then it's only good, like Mashiach have said. How could it be that the thinking about Shashnu and Kasapura is better than the Shashnu and Kasapura itself? It can't be better. It's worse. I mean, maybe it's better in some sense because it's organizing it. It's giving it a form. It's giving it the correct answer to that question. But it's not better. The only thinking that is better is thinking that can actually end by thinking. That's called Lishma. That's why Torah Lishma is the only way you learn Kabbalah. If you learn Nigli, you never learn Torah Lishma. Because it never has the ma'ala of machshava. It's always subservient to something that you're doing. Right? The Torah Lishma has to mean, like it says in every book that understood anything since forever, Torah Lishma only means learning Nistar. Because those are the only things that they end with knowing. Their point is to know them.
Because as much as whatever, every taz and every bachino, it's only the ma'ala of machshava. That's what you mean?
Yeah. There's complications in this. But yeah, the Taz is only about, at least from the perspective of it being practical wisdom, it's only about what to do when this case happens. And therefore, it's about things that are happening. If you learn it and you're not planning, for example, what's a Torah Lishma Lishma? What's the biggest Shleil Lishma? Learn the Shleil Manas Lasses. If you learn and you're not planning to do what you're learning, that one, from that perspective, will be Shleil Lishma.
It's a little counterintuitive to what you're saying.
No, from this, in the level of masa, in the level of how the level of masa, it's true. Because that's a bluffer, that's what I said last week. That's called it's not learning internally, it's learning externally. That's called
doig tradition doig vach toivim masufa lekits. No, it's not learning the Shema.
This is about learning.
The meaning of that kind of learning,
you could do,
the meaning, the why. Why do we learn not to speak Lishnara? Not to speak Lishnara.
Uh-huh.
If you learn about it and you speak Lishnara, you're masufa lekits. You're just saying the words, but you're not really learning. That's what it means. But that's not the ma'al of learning for itself. That's not Torah Lishma on the real high level. That's two different meanings.
So if you're learning about
the meaning,
is that
Shalai
Lishma?
What?
Is that Shalai Lishma?
Menasaf Alachetz, it's called. It's not the same thing as Shalai Lishma.
That's what I'm asking. In this state,
Menasaf Alachetz. We could call it Shalai Lishma, yeah.
It is Shalai Lishma? Yeah, would it be a
it's a different meaning of Shalai Lishma.
Would it be a Buddha Lishma?
For that Torah Lishma, Lishma, no. Because that's the exact problem. That's the Torah Lishma discussion. There's no someone who learns without planning to do it. There's the moshvam chizilimitav, which is a different thing. Learning about the good leads people to do good. That's an interesting fact about human nature. If you learn a lot of halacha, you start being melaktik halacha, even if you don't plan to. That just has to do with Mashiach on Friday, because we are influenced a lot by what we think. But that's a different thing. But if you learn like a doig, like doig vechatoif, like that's manasof alechit, then no, then there's no mutach shlo, then it's making you worse. You're becoming a death mathless amnubus kind of person because you're finding out all the tricks of the world without planning to not do them. You're actually becoming a worse person. The is when you learn things that are just theory or even in this sense, you don't yet plan to do it like we say, the Moshla Mahzil Mitav sense, and slowly, for example, I tell you should learn Kabbalah, you say, why should I learn Kabbalah? I tell you, you'll become a kibble. Okay, that makes sense. I'm a kibble, it's a good person. I'll learn Kabbalah. Then slowly you learn Kabbalah and you realize that learning Kabbalah is better than being a kibble. Perhaps, because it's stuck again. That's the bulishma, and that happens all the time. I see that. That's a nat. By the way, that happens. You don't need. It's not a void of Hashem. It happens naturally because you start to start seeing that it's good. I know so many people that started learning Kabbalah because they thought it's going to be cool, and then they started actually liking it. That happens to everything. Because you start seeing the goodness. That's what we keep on explaining. You're seeing that it's stuck in Gishmak. Then you start to do it for itself, and then you do it even when you don't make money. That's the problem. That's why it's not a very good plan to learn Kabbalah in order to become a Mekibbel.
But Gishmak is about the feelings.
No, not in that sense. Of course not. In the sense of seeing the good, seeing how it's really good. That's why it's a bad plan. Someone who wants to learn Torah in order to become a Mekibbel has to actively work that way, because otherwise he might start liking it even when he doesn't make money. Many people, I know so many people that started getting into learning, they thought it's going to be a good business, turns out he just likes it, and then he stopped making money after it because he doesn't do the Shlodeshma parts, which make you money, right? Something that really happens. It's a very normal thing, that Shlodeshma Vodeshma. It's not a magic, it's not a kasha. But anyway, that's not related to our Shia, that's just to answer these questions. All this food say this Torah that Pira means that we just told that the Pchsoinis is also the premiers. Right? Remember? It says in all the Hanta Gechsidus Spurim. Because Pira was like of the gift, the Shtobden Ishom. Like Hanukkah was about the Kima Mitzvahs. But Pira was just about existing. Stimmt? That's what they talk about. And from here we learn that the gift from Ayid is also Heilig. Now you understand what this means according to my new chat. It means the Pnimis is Chitzonius. There's no faith. This whole wanting is Chitzonius. That's Menasaf Elachitz. What people call Pnimis is really what Togim would call Menasaf Elachitz. You have a very, when you learn Torah, it's for Sayyim Dolkes. That's Menasaf Elachitz. You're so fakocht in it and you love it so much and you want it so much, but you're not planning to do it. Like most people on Yom Kippur, right? They're so fakocht, but they're not really planning to do it. You're planning to do something in a whole different state of mind than being fakocht. No, Shaykh, these two things. So that's called Menasef Elachitz, that's called Chanukah Mitzvah Agroi Zalecht, and it's fine, it's just this. But that's the Yevunim, that's what the Yevunim say. But Abir Pirim, Titmel Amasa, what's the mitzvah of Pirim? I want to tell you, nobody has Dvaikas on Pirim. Every time tells you has Dvaikas, it's bluffing, or it doesn't have Pirim. Pirim, it danced Arim, and we get Mishlech Mura Sanef for the Zweite, and we get Zechogs, and that's Lamasa, and that's the whole point, at least for Bechinas, for Lachavayim, for Lamukim, there's also. That's the whole point. Like the Rambam says, the ik simcha. When the Rambam says, "Shain sam simcha gedolim fiur el samayach levanim veislam," it means literally. This can toyer list. I grew simcha. Shtik ne toyer simcha. Smeitim zasneig zanis shili. Nein. That's what happiness is. Happiness means being a good human being, whether you feel it or not. This is kind of problems. By the way, you feel it also, because if you're a normal man, you feel it. But that's not the point. Happiness is not a feeling. Happiness is a fact. And if you smile other people, that's what happiness is. Everyone should give money to their local matun of yoinim. And I'm Zlaina Evim Zogem Fazich Alain, that's a new Hasidic chat. And Shoyin Shreve, happy Yom Tov.